So if you remember last time, it's I think we missed the previous time, but anyway, holidays basically are knocking out a lot of our classes. But anyway, we talked about the nature, we're going to talk today about the nature of Gehenna's fire and the nature of the human soul. The reason we bring this up is because Ramban occupies a very difficult to defend position, and he needs to work on defending it. What's that position? His position is that Gehenna is actually not some world outside of our own planet, but actually it's located here on Earth. Gehenna is located somewhere in this world. And if you remember, he quoted a slew of Mamori Chazal. He quoted all of these different passages within rabbinic literature that talks about fire being on Earth and having real consequences. One example, for instance, is Chamei Tveria. He mentions that there are hot springs in Israel, in Tiberias, and there are actually halachic ramifications of how it is heated up. If it's heated up by the sun, then we say Bishul doesn't apply. If you cook on it on Shabbos, then that might not necessarily apply, at least d'oraisa. But if it's heated up, the other option is that the fires of Gehenna are under it, and that's what provides the warmth for the hot springs of Tveria. So Rambam believes that Gehenna is a very real place here on earth because our rabbis seem to believe that. The difficulty is that if it is physical and the soul is spiritual, how are they supposed to be in contact with one another? So Rambam is going to have to show us how Gehenna is a place on earth, but the nature of the fires of Gehenna and the nature of the soul is not physical, but at the same time, while it's not physical, it does manifest itself to a certain extent. For lack of a better term, we'll use the word spiritual, but again, when I say spiritual, I don't mean colloquially. When people say, wow, that was a great yoga session, I feel so spiritual about that. I mean as a form, a spiritual form. So let's share the screen now, and we'll go to our limud for today. So, Yasher Koach, we are up to our fifth PDF of my scans. So we're going to talk about the nature of Gehenna, the nature of the human soul. El-Kachi Kabbalas Rabbeinu. So until this point, Ramban talked about what the different philosophers, the non-Jewish theologians believe. Now we're going to talk about what is the Jewish view, or the Ramban's understanding of the Jewish view on the fires of Gehenna and the nature of the human soul. Shakadosh Baruch Hu bara nafsho sehem shel tzadikim v'yibolo safik ruach zaka v'daka b'yoser. God created the human soul, and we know it is something that is daka b'yoser. So just a quick Hebrew definition over here. Usually when we use the word ava daka, ava means thick, daka means thin. The way the Ramban uses the word daka over here, which I'm highlighting, it doesn't mean thin like, for instance, this phone is thinner than this safer that I have here. This is the Sharik Mul, by the way, in case you're wondering. That's not what it means. When he says something becomes very thin, he means it loses, it doesn't have any physical qualities, any tactile qualities to it. So the same way the soul doesn't have any physical qualities to it, ain't a guf, it's not a body. Velo nigvelis ve'ena nigderes b'makom. It cannot be trapped, it cannot be contained within a specific area. Velo nitfeses kishar harucho shetosuno sabanudos. It's not like wind. Sometimes we use the same word in Hebrew to refer to wind and to spirit. There's ruach, which means we could talk about, you know, ruach no shabbos, mashiv haruach, umorid hageshem, that God brings the wind. That refers to, literally, when we talk about there's a wind chill factor, so that is physical wind. But ruach also means spiritual. So he's saying don't mix up these two definitions. There is something called wind, which is, it's air, but still physical in nature. But then there's also something called spirituality, which cannot be contained within a bottle. Ela mikas hamolochim v'nalas b'yoser. Rather, it is in a league. It's in the same category as the angels. And it may even be, don't ask me what the difference is, but it may even be considered on a higher rung of the spiritual ladder than the angels themselves. What does that mean practically? I'm not particularly sure, but that's how he rates it. Ain makom lefarish kochem musig mina, but we don't have time to really get into this, he says, even though he's about to really elaborate on this. Vakosu Medela, it says in the Pasuk in Bereshis, in Genesis at the beginning, Vayipach ba'pav nishmas chayim, that God blew into Adam, he blew into Adam the spirit of life. So when it says nishmas chayim, it doesn't mean literally God breathed air. I mean, you could understand it that way. But the way Ramban is explaining is that God imbued the human spirit into Adam. Not just that he gave him the ability to breathe. It's not referring to respiration, even though when you talk about the sugya of brain death, so then this is actually a pasuk people like to quote. So very briefly, what is the brain death sugya? So God willing, I'm working on this now. Has anyone ever heard of Rav Moshe David Tendler? Does that name ring a bell at all?
Yes.
Yeah, so he is... He's my Rebbe, and he's also a preeminent authority on Jewish medical ethics, and also happens to be a son-in-law of Rav Moshe Feinstein. So Rav Tendler got into a huge argument with Rav Schechter, Rabbi Bleich, major gedolim in our community about how we define death in Judaism. Because nowadays we have something called a respirator. And what a respirator allows someone to do is that it forces their body to breathe even in the absence of brain functionality. So the question is, if you put someone, let's say, on a respirator, but otherwise they are brain dead, they're not functioning, are they considered dead or not? And so Rev Tendler's position was that we base things on spontaneous respiration. That if someone is capable of breathing on their own, they may need help from a respirator for a little bit, but if their body, in the end of the day, it's irreversible, and they can never be brought to that position where they can breathe on their own again, that constitutes brain death, and that means it's the person is actually dead and can donate organs. That's one of the ramifications. You can donate organs. However, positions adopted by Gedolim such as Rav Herschel Schechter say that based on the Rambam, you need to wait for the brain, the heart, and the liver, which are considered the three primary organs. Don't ask me why liver gets up there with the heart and brain, but it does. When those three fail, that's when we know someone has passed away. So it's a huge nafkamina because the question is when it comes to organ donation. So if we say someone who is brain dead is considered actually dead, then you could harvest their organs and donate to someone who needs it. But if you need to wait for the heart, the brain, and the liver all to stop functioning, then organ donation doesn't really become possible. And the issue here is that if somebody wants to donate their organs and you harvest those organs from them, if according to Rav Herschel Schechter or people like Rabbi Bleich, that person is not halakhically dead yet, by harvesting their organs too early, that is halakhically murder. So that's a huge debate. And anyway, why do I bring that up? Because I just remember, you know, when I see people make their presentations, they like to turn to this pasuk over here in Bereshis' verse that God blew into Adam the breath of life, where they're trying to show how breath, how breathing, is the primary indication of someone being alive. But anyway, Ramban goes in the opposite direction of what all these people do when they quote this verse. And he says, what does it mean to breathe? What's it mean, the air? It's referring to nishmas chayim. It's referring to the spiritual soul that God, you know, as we like to imagine, breathed into Adam's body. Yomar kin min nishmas elokan nisna. That means that it was a soul given by God. V'lo mishtalshlus hasibos. It's not something that's comes from different materials. Now, what's he mean by the term? Another interesting tidbit. What does he mean by the term hishtalshalus hasibos? So in the Bayer over here, it says that he's referring to hiyuli v'hayisodos. So hiyuli is actually a Greek term, there is a, you know, this is like taking us a little far afield, but we're studying Jewish philosophy, so may as well share this because this is relevant to the general study of Jewish philosophy. The question is, you know, how do you always imagine? Let me ask you. God creates the world. How do you imagine that taking place? Did God just snap his fingers and then on every day, you know, God created light and darkness, God created animals, God created sea creatures before, right? So did God just snap his fingers and then out of nowhere they all appeared? Is that how we always imagined it? So yeah, I'll say for myself, that's how I always imagined it when I was told the creation story. So there is, that's called Yesh Me'ayin. That's called creation out of nothing. Ramban believes, among many other Rishonim, that there is something called primordial matter, which means that before God created the world, he created a primordial matter. He created a substance. That's using the word bara, that God created Yesh Me'ayin ex nihilo out of nowhere. And then from this primordial matter, God took that this substance and he fashioned the world. That's Yetzirah. He fashioned the world based on that. So some people, however, there are Greek philosophers that believe in the eternity of the universe, that the universe was always there, that that you know somehow there was never a beginning, but the universe, since the beginning of time or before then, however they conceptualize it, the universe always existed. That's one extreme. The other extreme is that God just all of a sudden snapped his fingers, as it were, and created the world, Yesh Me'ayin, ex nihilo, out of nowhere. And the middle interpretation is the Ramban, that there was two stages. God created primordial matter, and then from that primordial matter, God fashioned it into the world that we see with us today. So this is all to say, Ramban's point is that this soul that God gave to Adam, to Adam HaRishon, it's not made from primordial matter, because even that matter took physical manifestation, physical form. Rather, it is purely ephemeral, it's purely spiritual, and it has no physical qualities to it. Any questions or thoughts just before we continue to the next section? Okay, a lot to take in, I know. So let's continue talking about the nature of the human soul. That when light was created, so too the soul was created as well. By the will of God, that God created the lower earth and he also created the heavens. And all, you know, the angels, all the beings, spiritual beings that reside there, celestial beings. So the same way, the same way God created the heavens, God created spiritual beings, he also, of the same nature, created Gehenna. He created hell. And he created a fire. There's that term again. Daka min hadaka, which is literally very thin, which means that it has no physical quality to it. She'ena guf mamish nifas, it's not, it doesn't have a body to it, so it doesn't have physical form. Tofes v'drom hadaka mechalasam, and this fire, since it's of a spiritual nature, it's able to burn and destroy all that is from, that is also of a purely spiritual nature. By the way, do we know the story of Aaron's two sons, Nadav and Avihu?
They brought something into the temple that they weren't supposed to, or something.
Right. So it's very similar along those lines. So they actually brought the right stuff, but they brought it at the wrong time. So the Mishkan, the tabernacle, was getting, it was time to do the services, or they weren't sure when to do it. So out of great hislava, supposedly out of a, they just really want to do the services, either for the grandeur, either because they love God so much that they want to do it, whatever the reason is, that's a sugya unto itself. They ran ahead, they performed the service in front of God, and then a fire came out, it went up their nostrils, and through there, and it consumed them. It killed them. However, their bodies were left unscathed. So he doesn't mention this, but I'm making the connection for us that that's a similar kind of fire, in that it doesn't actually affect physical objects, but affects spiritual entities. So what it did was it went into their bodies, it went to their soul, wherever that is contained, and it scathed and burned their souls, and it killed them on the spot there. So that's actually an instance of where we find a fire of a spiritual form found inside the Torah. And this kind of fire that we're discussing, that fire from Gehenna, is found in this place. So the same way the angels have their place in heaven, there's the fires of Gehenna, which have their place in Gehenna. Think we may have, let me just check something. All right, let's get to the end of that section. So what is the difference between the fire in this world versus the fires that are found in Gehenna? The Frisha Rabbeinu, Bein Ha'esha V'Olam HaZeh, Bein Ha'esha Hi Behefer Shagadol Dagas Oso Esh. What's the difference? Well, we have a Gemara. The Gemara of Sachem says, Or Didon Ivri B'motzei Shabbos, the light, the fire that we see in this world, was created at the end of creation, at the end of Shabbos, or the Gehenna Ivri B'Sheni. But the fires of Gehenna was created on day number two. Now, what is the significance of when the Gehenna fires are made versus when the earth, the regular physical fires were made? Vein Sufik Acharei Hamemer Hazos, Sheim Rotz Mahalsa Eish Ahila, Sosa Dakman Adaka, Ashi Yasu Salah Bios B'Yom Sheni. By telling us that this fire was made on the second day, it informs us that it is of a higher order, a higher nature. Because day two is also the same day that the angels were created. There is a principle that the closer something is to creation, the closer it is to a spiritual form. So by saying that the fires of Gehenna were created on day two, it speaks to their more spiritual nature. And as the week went on, as the days of creation went on, things became more mundane and physical in matter. So the fact that fires of Gehenna were created on day two, as opposed to the end of the week, like regular fire, on Matzei Shabbos, which is why we do Havdalah with the fire, by the way, after Shabbos, because that's when fire was created. Since the Gehenna fires were created earlier, it indicates to us that they are of a higher order. The Ein Sofeg L'Shum Adam Ba'olam. Look, no one is going to have a doubt over here. It's pretty obvious to us. The fires of this world can never consume the human soul. V'afila Aver Olami HaNitfas. In an ish machalabo, the loso refus or so. And it can't destroy that air. Lo shamat l'echa minha amaminim o min ha-kofrim. I haven't heard, not a single opinion, not by either someone who is faithful or someone who rejects our tradition. No one thinks. Bein gam achshava odak v'amak b'svar, gas hamachshava, whether someone is a haughty thinker, whether someone is a deep thinker. No one thinks that if someone's body gets consumed, that means they no longer exist and will not able to obtain the reward. That would be absurd. Because when I think about it, I think of all the righteous people through history that suffered and their bodies were destroyed, their bodies were burned. We do not require our bodies for reincarnation. That is a Jewish belief. By the way, going back to my tangent from before, remember how we said that some people, one of the concerns that people have with organ donation is that they think that you need your entire body for reincarnation. But it's reductio ad absurdum, because what are you going to say about all the Jewish martyrs, all the righteous people who, you know, they died in the Shoah, they died through persecutions, or simply their bodies just degraded over the years. They're not becoming reincarnated. So no, the fires of Gehenna have nothing to do with one's body. And one's body is not necessary. If one is reincarnated in a body, God will take care of that. One does not need their actual body. Elisha Isha Hisha Begehenam. This fire of Gehenna that burns the soul is a different fire altogether. It's not the kind of fire you find in the coals, you find on torches. It's not the fire even of the sun. Even though they didn't know much about the sun back then, but they believed that the sun was of a more spiritual kind of flame, which it explains, by the way, why people worship the sun. They didn't realize that it was just a big ball of fire and gas like a star that we know today. So they believed that it was a spiritual flame of sorts. But what Ramban is saying, even with that belief, the fires of Gehenna are of a more spiritual nature than the sun itself. Because when it comes to the sun, the fires of the sun still work together with the other four, the other three elements, water, earth, and air. So another ancient belief that, I wouldn't call it an ancient Jewish belief, I would call it just a belief of the ancient world that Jewish theologians, philosophers adopted, because this was the science of back then. They believed that there were four elements, that there was, I don't know if anyone ever watched the Avatar TV show, I'm sure it's after many people's time, but you know, there's like all these TV shows where there's the fire nation, the water nation, the earth nation, and the wind nation. It's a fantasy TV show. Anyway, it's all based on this idea that there were four elements. So I remember when I was in 12th grade at Darche, so we were learning, I think it was Orchu Sadikim, a Musar Sefer, a Jewish ethics work. And in there, he made reference to the Arba Yesodos, the four elements, the four foundations. And I asked my Rebbe, I said, well, I don't know, I took chemistry last year, and I remember there's something called a periodic table. It looks like there's a lot more than just four elements. In fact, water's not even an element, right? It's H2O. So that's not even an element. So I said, what's pshat in that? And he said, no, you know, you have to believe there's four elements. If Chazal say so, then that is true. And so then I remember, I said, yeah, I just don't buy that. You know, it's not even a Jewish concept. So what happened was, I remember Purim that year, one of my friends who was really frum, he's a little inebriated. So during Purim, he runs over to me with the Sefer. He points at me like, look, it says in the Sefer, there are only four elements. Read it. It's right there. I'm like, okay. I read it enough times already. I get the point. But he was trying to convince me of that in his zealous fervor. While he was inebriated, he was standing up for what he perceived as the Kavod HaTorah, as what needed to be said. Anyway, that's all to say that there's an ancient belief of four elements. And since Ramban is medieval, he's going to adopt whatever is the understanding of medieval science back then, as long as it doesn't contradict his belief of what the Torah says. All right, let me just pause over here for any comments or questions that we may have. Is there anything unclear, anything that could be clarified before we look at something else? Okay. Again, this is, we're making a push. I would say we're going to do one more session on this topic, just to wrap up the nature of the soul, the nature of fires of Gehenna. I understand it's a little bit repetitive, but I want to just go in order and make sure we don't miss anything. God willing, in two shiurim from now, we're going to look into something that I've referenced a number of times and that I was requested to clarify, which is kares, divine excision. We mentioned how divine excision, how there are some people who are so wicked that they get the punishment of kares. And what is kares? Does it mean someone dies early? Does it mean their kids die early? Does it mean that their soul gets cut off from the afterlife? It's very unclear. So God willing, in two shiurim from now, we'll address the question of kares. But we just need to finish this section first. Anyway, I just want to share in the Peirush of the Chazon Yoel here, there's one idea that I just wanted to share with you. In this section of Shaar HaGmul, there's not as much in the Chazon Yoel that I found beneficial for us, but I thought this piece was interesting. Haramban Hirich Levar Shashem Yisparach Samha Esha Zosim Malachim Yucha Kamosha Samha Malachim Bashamayim. The Ramban said earlier, what we read today, that God placed the fire in its place in Gehenna, the same way God placed the angels in heaven. But Tzarek Bir, Lama Lo Laharich Baseh Kol Kach, why do we need this kind of elaboration? She'efshir Lomar Rak Shebara Ha'esha Zos. God, all Ramban had to tell us was that God created fire and put it in Gehenna. The Lama La Seislanu Mashal Shekmosha Kava Malkum Malachim HaShemayim King Kava Malkum Esh Hazos Gehenna. Why did he have to go on and say, well, you know, how do I know that fire can be found in Gehenna? Because if angels can be found in heaven, fire can be found in Gehenna. Just tell me fire was put in Gehenna and I get the idea. That's question number one. Question number two, V'nir Sheba Emet Selchura Od Kasha. Sherech Ramban Lahakshos, because Ramban elaborated in a question, on the Shama Ichmuk Velas Birya Ruchnis Mamakom Echad. Ramban was puzzled by how could the soul, we're going to see this a little later on, be contained in one place. Yet he doesn't seem to be puzzled that fire, which is spiritual, can be contained in one place. So why does Ramban seem okay with the fact that the fire of Gehenna can be contained in one place, but the soul, for some reason, he has a harder time wrapping his head around how the soul can be contained in one's body, which is also just in one place? That's the second question. But it's actually not so difficult to understand why fire could be found in Gehenna, because spiritual entities could be contained within spiritual places. So the fires of heaven, which are not physical, can be contained within Gehenna, which is not physical, just like the angels in heaven. Just like heaven was created as the spiritual holding place for the angels, so the angels can be contained in heaven. And now it makes sense how the fires of Gehenna can be found in Gehenna. Now it makes sense why Ramban was not puzzled how Gehenna's fires can be found in Gehenna. The same way the angels can be found in heaven. Ramban's only question was when it comes to the human soul. How could the human soul be contained within Gehenna? Because the place of the soul is not meant to be in Gehenna. The fires of Gehenna are meant to be in Gehenna. The human soul, that's not made to be in Gehenna. It's made to be in my body, right? It's supposed to be somewhere else where it's supposed to be preserved in the bounds of life. That's why Ramban had to tell us how the soul, it's possible for it to be in our bodies, even though that's not its intended place and its intended destination. But Gehenna, there's no problem. There it is, the fire. So the human soul is a bit of an enigma because in one respect, it's spiritual and it can be in places like heaven, it can be in places like Gehenna, but in other respects, it could also be contained within the human body. So it's almost self-contradictory. But when you think about it, that's heaven, that's Gehenna as well. Gehenna is a spiritual place, Ramban tells us. But again, it's manifested enough that the heat of Gehenna could be felt here on earth through the waters of Chamei Tveria, according to one opinion. So there seems to be this dual nature of both spiritual and physical qualities to it that Ramban is trying to reconcile. So I think we'll end with that piece. And what we'll do next time is we'll continue talking about the nature of the fires of Gehenna. We'll wrap it up in our next shiur. And then the following one, God willing, we'll move on to talk about Mises Kares. We'll talk about the punishment of divine excision and what that means from the Ramban and others' perspectives. Okay, so I'll just pause one more time. Any questions or thoughts before we conclude for today?
Interpretation.
Yeah.
It everybody interprets it in a different way. And, you know, when I was very young, married, I had a discussion with somebody and they said to me, I'll give you one word of advice, one sentence of advice. If you go to a rabbi to ask a question, to find an answer, be sure to pick the rabbi that's going to give you the answer you want to hear.
if it works like that, what happens? They call that rabbi shopping.
Right.
That's an actually, I don't know if you were here for my interview Zoom. Were you on that by any chance?
Yes, I was.
So if you remember, the subject of that shiur was about if you don't like what you hear from one rabbi, you go to another rabbi.
Right. Well,
I guess the shiur was received well enough that I'm here today. But
yeah, exactly.
All right. Great.
Okay. Thank you, Rabbi.
Yes, God willing, we should be having the Chumash here Sunday, God willing. It's Erev Yom Kippur.
Yeah, well, I don't know. It's going to be tough. People are going to be busy. Oh, I can't speak for anybody else.
Yeah. I'll give, you know, we missed one week already, so I'll give the shiur. Whoever's on is on.
Right. You'll review the following week.
Yeah, God willing, I could always do, you know, a few minute review of what we covered. That shouldn't be.
Yeah, well, the next few Sundays are all Erev Yontif. You have Simchat Torah, you have Sukkot.
Oh,
They're all. Wait a minute. The first day, it's Saturday and Sunday, the Yontif.
No, actually.
You won't be. You won't be.
The
second day, right. The following two Sundays.
The fourth and the 11th. So we have to get in tomorrow. We have to get in this Sunday. Otherwise, it's just going to be a huge gap.
Right.
All right. That's good to know. Well, God bless. I'll give it a Sunday. We'll see where it goes. All right.
All right. Have a good
Shabbos.
Yes. Good. You too.